Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet.
All of it is needed immediately now. There's no time to wait for like a perfect solution. And we should be doing everything we can to restore our natural capital that helps to restore carbon into our soils and our land, as well as investing in long-term technical carbon removal solutions.
Since the Industrial Revolution, human activities have raised the levels of atmospheric CO2 by about 50%, meaning we now have over 150% more CO2 in the atmosphere than we did in 1750. These high levels are trapping heat and raising our temperature of the planet, but there is a natural way to reverse this effect, giving our soil the power to reabsorb the CO2 released into the air. That's Alessandra Guerrera's mission with the company she co-founded, Nori. As an entrepreneur and environmental engineer, she decided to make carbon removal her work and help develop a technology that takes farming to a new and more sustainable level. Growing up in Miami, she realized early on that climate change would have a major impact on her life and the lives of those around her. And that created a sense of urgency that really made her dedicate the past 18 years to researching solutions on how to reverse carbon emission. Today, Alessandra talks about her motivation behind the business, what made her choose carbon soil as the focus of her business venture, and how she applied her background as an engineer and her knowledge of blockchain to reverse carbon emissions and reinstate the soil's ability to absorb CO2. With over 18 carbon removal projects under its belt and more than 125 million tons of carbon removed from the atmosphere, it's safe to say that Nori has found a way to reverse the damage that's been done so far. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our Season 2 sponsor, Digital Scope. Did you know your website has a carbon footprint? Well, digital technology has a larger carbon footprint than the entire aviation industry, and it's only getting bigger. Digital power consumption is increasing by 9% every year. At this rate, our digital carbon footprint could be responsible for as much as 14% of global emissions by 2040. If you're a digital-first company or really any company with a website and want to understand the impact your website is having on the environment, Digital Scope can translate visitor data into carbon measurement, all with a simple one line of code added to your website. Check out digitalscope.com/someonelikeyou. The first 100 people to sign up get free access for an entire year. Alessandra, welcome to the show.
Hi, Marco. Thanks for having me.
So I want to just get kind of a little bit familiar with your background before we get into Nori and everything that that you and your team have built, and you know, understanding a bit around carbon removal, carbon storage, carbon markets, and how all that works. I think a lot of people are looking at that as a space to help when we're thinking about how do we go carbon neutral and how companies do these type of things. And so I understand this space is ballooning to what they estimate almost $50 billion into the future, if not, I'm sure, more. How did you get into Nori, and was there a background in climate or sustainability, and how did you make that connection?
Yeah, so my story starts like when I was 15. I saw, you know, I was very nerdy. I loved science. Geology was actually something that really interested me, and I loved being in the environment outside in nature. And I saw on the Science Channel a short series called Ecotech, and it essentially showcased different types of technologies that could be used towards the environment. One of those things was direct air capture. And at the time, there was a professor at Columbia University, Klaus Lackner, who was on the Science Channel talking about direct air capture. And this is in like 2006. And so direct air capture is a form of removing CO2 from the atmosphere as a way of like reversing carbon emissions. And you could pump it back into the ground or do something with it. And he was showcasing this as a way of addressing global warming, which I'm from Miami, Florida, and that's where I'm at right now. Long way about it, but I returned home after 14 years being in many different places. And sea level rise is a big thing. So I knew at that time, and people were talking about global warming and the melting ice caps and how our beaches are eroding. And that immediately frightened me. And it actually kind of makes me still perplexed that now, where climate change is just a global phenomenon, people are aware of it, that still we seem not to be paying too much attention to the effects of sea level rise and climate change on these coast cities. So anyways, to answer your question, I've been in climate since I was 15. I ended up going to Columbia University, studying with Klaus Lackner. I have 2 degrees, a bachelor's and a master's in environmental engineering and sustainable energy generation. And I actually had dropped out of my PhD because I discovered that I was an entrepreneur. I took a class called Entrepreneurship for Scientists and Engineers as part of our graduate curriculum. And once you pull back the veil and look behind the curtain and realize you're an entrepreneur, there's no going back. So I dropped out of my PhD program at University of California and started working for the utility on renewable energy programs and systems. And then it took 3 years of, you know, hackathons on the weekends, networking events during the weekdays to find the right team and the right idea. And that happened in 2017 in the fall when I met my co-founders of Nori, and we decided to create a marketplace to incentivize people to remove carbon from the atmosphere, and that we would sell these as carbon removal credits, not just a carbon credit. There's many reasons why those are all different, and that we would do it on the blockchain and, you know, use new technology in a new way. So I'm one of the founders of Nori, and we're just closing up 6 years now.
And when we think about carbon removal and being able to have this ecosystem, it's been around for years, and obviously they've been using it with a lot of success in Europe. It's, you know, and there's a reason why coal now is in many parts of Europe is more expensive than natural gas. And obviously there's a lot of better options than that, but that's the progression of these carbon options or carbon taxes, as most people call it. But how do you see the market for carbon removal and then selling these credits currently? And where do you think that they're going to go before we kind of get into Nori and your, to take that just a step back is, you know, what is this market? Is it working and where do you see it going?
Yeah. Okay. So taking a step back and on the high level, carbon markets, there's a variety and there's a long history. So I think it first generated in 1990 when the Kyoto Protocol was established and the UN said we're going to start monitoring greenhouse gas emissions. And so that's when we saw a lot of efforts to create carbon credits. And I'll say that there are also 2 broad categories. There's regulatory carbon markets. So regulators in, let's say, a state or a region like California might say, you know, we're going to cap emissions of organizations, et cetera. And that's a completely different thing from the other type, which is voluntary carbon markets, which Nori plays a role in. And we're seeing lots of development across both of those categories of carbon markets. Regulations are constantly changing and improving and growing. Same thing with voluntary carbon markets. And I would say it's still pretty complex. And there's a lot of uncertainty around what's in a carbon credit, whether it's regulatory or voluntary, because we still don't have perfect data for accounting carbon emissions. How much carbon are we emitting across the globe, across different businesses and countries? And we also don't have perfect measurement or quantification of what carbon is being sequestered or removed from the atmosphere via different sources, whether it's nature-based or engineered. The engineered solutions are quite easier, quite better with the quantification. It's a little bit more straightforward, but particularly when it comes to doing things like planting trees and building new forests or restoring mangroves, or like Nori, working with farmers to adopt regenerative agriculture practices so that carbon gets stored in soil. Measuring that is really, really difficult. So to answer your question is, it's still pretty new. I don't see carbon markets going away. I think they're just going to have to get better, and people's understanding of them need to improve. And by nature of a thing evolving, they will get better.
And there's been obviously, I'm sure being in this space, you've seen the reports of, there's been a lot of news and press that, oh, the voluntary carbon market, you know, people are selling, you know, or buying credits for trees that, you know, 95% of them are not actually, you know, good credits. Right. What's happened in that space, and does that have an impact to NORI, not in maybe the projects that you're doing, but just in the impacts of the market in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of really analogous. I think the closest analogy I can think about right now is crypto, where you see like Bitcoin started and then it rise in price and it fell and it rise and it fell, and it's still here and it's still around, and crypto and blockchain hasn't really gone anywhere, but it's going through different phases of evolution. And I think to your question, yeah, those types of articles or insights into what didn't work on within carbon market schemes, whether regulatory or voluntary, they're impactful. And I think that they're impactful in what can be a harmful way, but also a very beneficial way. It's kind of, you can't get rid of the criticism without learning a little bit about it, right? And there's some true things to what's being published. Like a lot of those forestry projects, they aren't well monitored, or they don't really represent true emissions reductions. And so that doesn't mean we should get away with carbon credits or carbon projects and the carbon market in general. It's like, okay, what failed there and how can we improve them? And this is what brings up MRV, a concept of monitoring, reporting, verifying carbon sinks. And there's a lot of organizations, startups, and established organizations investing resources into MRV so that we can improve our knowledge of how much carbon is being either emitted or sequestered or reduced in different places.
And so in 2017, you found your co-founders and you had this initial idea with NORI. What was the kind of initial kind of go-to-market business plan for NORI?
Oh my gosh. It was your standard, like, go to a corporate like Google or Apple and sell them carbon credits. It was like, just go after the big corporates. And it was funny because our initial hypothesis, and so for those entrepreneurs out there with all their hypotheses that they need to validate or invalidate, really treat your assumptions as those things, assumptions to be tested. Ours was that in our two-sided marketplace where we supply carbon projects and sell the credits, we thought that the demand was easy, peasy, lemon squeezy, and then that the supply would be really difficult to get. And so when we started going to market in 2018, after writing our white paper in April of 2018, we discovered, oh, it was actually quite easy to start working with some of these farmers who were really interested, you know, in the innovator, the early adopter type farmers who wanted to work with us. So we were able to onboard our first project. And then we found it was incredibly difficult on the demand side to sell these credits, because the only true like go-to market path for carbon credits established prior was like to these big corporates through these carbon credit schemes, or not schemes, but programs. And so naturally, large corporate customers, they're risk averse. So they're not going to work with NORI or some small startup working on a new carbon credit that has like no reputation or standing or record of being able to complete these long-term climate restoration projects. And so we had to like take a good look at how we were going to go to market. And by a series of testing and events like joining Techstars, et cetera, we discovered that, you know, we're really good at the retail part. So consumers, individuals can come to our website and just buy directly from our website. That's about 30% of our sales volume. But then also we work with small, medium-sized businesses and enterprises to support our projects. And, you know, I won't say too much about it, but we have a developing strategy on our go-to market that's becoming more and more clear. But it is definitely a journey, and it changes all the time because people's understanding of carbon credits changes. and the desire to support things with your additional income changes over time as consumers or investors demand more climate action.
And as the market is growing, I'm sure, you know, we talk a lot about in the show push and pull, where, you know, you had to really push on companies to acquire, and we're starting to see this kind of pull of the market. And when it comes to the market that you're building, like when it comes to these companies thinking about buying credits, like what really is the main driver that you need to solve? Is it you know, making sure that it's valid? Is it price point? Because my understanding is, you know, saving X amount of trees is going to garner X cost because of the validity of it, the longevity of it, versus something being sucked out of the air versus maybe something that's being, you know, stored in the ground through, as you talk about, regenerative soil opportunities. What is it that you're finding that's your challenge or that you need to solve in order to get companies to be more comfortable in purchasing these?
Yeah, that is such a good question. I'm finding right now that every customer is different, and just because they might approach working with an organization like Nori differently doesn't mean we can't solve their needs with the same solution, to be honest with you. It's just how do we message it in a way that helps them understand that it does meet the need that they have, assuming that we're able to. So, for example, you might have an organization that's saying, okay, we're going to be net zero, and we want to negate truly every ton of carbon we've ever emitted. We're going to account for it, and then we're going to pay for carbon removal for that. And then let me say the other example. The other example are you have, you know, just your small, medium-sized enterprise wanting to make a commitment and take action on climate, and to show that and make that part of their brand and their mission and values. And so they might want to work with Nori as a program for doing just that, right? Either branding their product as climate forward, whether it's pet food or their internet services. They want to work with Nori and say, okay, like, we want to do something real that we can feel confident in and share with our customers or our users, and they can understand the good story. So it's more of a marketing thing and less about, you know, very strict accounting on emissions. So in the former case where it's like strict accounting, so much needs to be improved there. So as I mentioned earlier, like the carbon accounting aspect of like understanding how much carbon are we actually emitting, there are a lot of incredible startups that started, you know, from a few years back to still popping up around the world all the time now, on how do they help businesses to account for their greenhouse gas emissions. There are some methods like using finances, like, okay, what per dollar, how much are you spending in different sectors, and then estimating the carbon emissions associated with that. Or there's actually going back to the data and like estimating carbon emissions based off of your utilities and the miles that your fleet of delivery trucks drove, et cetera. So that all needs to be improved on the accounting side. And then on the carbon removal side, to really get to net zero, truly net zero, is you have to buy, you know, 1,000 years or more permanence carbon credits. What do I mean by this? Earlier in the podcast, I mentioned that not all carbon credits are the same. So first of all, in the market, there's avoidances, like, you know, I'm going to put out renewable energy. I avoid emitting for the electrons we're producing to run our laptops or our phones that we're listening to this podcast on. It was off of solar, so there's nothing, no harm there, avoided. Reductions are like energy efficiency. Well, I improve the energy efficiency of my building, so I reduce my carbon emissions. Or actual removals, meaning I've sequestered or removed carbon from the atmosphere and stored it somewhere for a period of time. And carbon credits have different permanences associated with them, like how long is that carbon stored or avoided? And it could be 10 years, 40 years, 100 years, or 1,000 years. And what we're seeing is a lot of increase in net zero claims, like goals to be net zero. But there is very little supply right now for truly net zero compliant carbon credits. And the ones that we have seen on the market are all sold. So these are what we call like more technical carbon removal solutions that remove carbon for 1,000 years or more. And they're selling for like $800 or maybe $500 per ton. So very expensive. So a lot of these companies that are making these net zero claims, like unless they're procuring for like forward purchases, like Microsoft just announced a huge purchase of carbon removal, technical carbon removal. I think it was $200 million, I believe. So unless they're doing that, I don't see many of these organizations being able to meet those net zero claims. Now, I know I'm talking a lot, but that's going to bring me to the second part, which is how do you actually take action without meeting these net zero compliant, really high premium carbon credits? And that's just by like assessing the other options that might be working with regenerative agriculture, with restoring mangroves, and assessing like what is the climate impact of that thing and how do we tell a good story? Because all of it is needed immediately now. There's no time to wait for like a perfect solution. And we should be doing everything we can to restore our natural capital that helps to restore carbon into our soils and our land, as well as investing in long-term technical carbon removal solutions.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. And when we think about Nori and the solution that you've created, why was blockchain important and why did that come into the picture as well?
That's a good question. So there was a couple of reasons why we decided to build the marketplace on the blockchain. One was for transparency, two, immutability, meaning it couldn't be changed. So once a carbon credit is purchased and retired, like it is done. It's written in stone. You can't change it on the record. And the third was for the ability to tokenize these assets, either as non-fungible or fungible tokens. So Nori's carbon removal credits, the NRTs that we have, are non-fungible tokens that are retired on the blockchain, and you can view that immutable record through our blockchain record. But we also have the ability, and we've paused this for now, we have the ability to create a fungible token, the Nori token, which could be used for price discovery of purchasing one NRT or one carbon credit. Given the uncertainty in the regulatory space with regard to cryptocurrencies right now and our need to focus on scaling carbon removal assets, those NRT supplies, we've decided to do that, to just focus on that. But the Nori token is still a beloved idea and we expect to execute on it. We're not sure when.
Yeah, it seems like you're providing, you know, clear transparency and trust in terms of what did somebody buy and here is this record. And
exactly.
that's incredibly important. When you think about the supply, Nori, what kind of supply do you have? And I believe your focus is on soil and regenerative agriculture. Is there any other focuses that you have? Is that in line?
Yeah. So yes, our primary focus to date has been regenerative agriculture projects. We announced our partnership with Bayer Crop Science as a commercial partner to help onboard tens of thousands of acres within the U.S. of their farmers to adopt these practices and sequester carbon. So that was a big one for us. And then we're continuing to do that and work with our independent farmers who come through the system. We also plan to expand to different types of carbon removal methodologies, of course. We have a very smart team that's constantly looking at the different technologies and quantification methods available, because any methodology for enrolling any type of project requires a method of quantification. And that has to be done, or so far we've had it done independently by a third party. So that's one of the key recipes to onboarding a new methodology. And then I will say we did share our white paper recently, earlier this summer, on our blended ton. And that is essentially how we envision we could create with partners a net zero compliance or net zero like eligible carbon credit. And that would be by pairing one of our immediately available 10 years of storage of you know, carbon removal through farmlands, the NRT, with 1 ton removed for 1,000 years plus, but that ton to be delivered in 10 years time. So it's essentially a future funding of those. And so pairing these two assets together, you're able to take action now by one asset, knowing that in the future it will be a permanent carbon removal for 1,000 years or more.
So you obviously got the attention of Bayer in order to partner with them. How did that come to be in terms of just the business and the growth? Like, how have you funded the business, and how did you get a company like that to say, yeah, well, let's partner with Nori, and how have you been able to build up the demand side once you do these type of partnerships?
Yeah, it's super interesting. Building a two-sided marketplace is quite challenging, but it's a fun challenge. It's almost like, what is like a three-legged race. Imagine you have two people tied one of their legs together. So you can only go as far as one goes forward. So you take a step forward on the left, you need to take a step forward on the right. If they go two steps forward, you have to go two steps forward on the right as well. So same thing with building up this marketplace. And once we were able to enroll a few farmers and demonstrate that we had a platform for this, we were able to open conversations with organizations like Bayer and some others, pardon me. But Nori's, we first were bootstrapped. So the founders, we all kind of just didn't pay ourselves for 2 years. We were able to get some angel investments, and we used that to pay the couple of employees that we had on staff at the time, some of our OG Nori knots. A Nori knot is what we call someone who works at Nori. Venturing on the adventure of the frontier of reversing climate change. And then we did a seed round, which was nice because then we could pay ourselves as founders, and then continued to do additional funding in a Series A round as well. And I think that all helped, right? So having the seed round, the Series A round, being established, having several farmers already demonstrated, were able to get them the money that they, or help them to earn those additional revenue streams from selling carbon credits, was a proof point for Bayer and that conversation. And, you know, they really want to support this switch. Like, we all know the world around. We all know that the way that we are treating this planet is not working and something has to change. And that includes the involvement of your smallholder farmers to your large conglomerates, right? Like, all hands on deck. And I honestly believe most people are really good people. And so the people at Bayer were like, okay, how can we work with an innovator like Nori to help bring some of these farmers onto these new practices and then, you know, provide additional revenue for them as a business?
And it's a very difficult thing for farmers. Farmers are not making crazy amounts of money. It's a very difficult business. There's a lot of help from government as well to subsidize the businesses. But when you speak to farmers, you know, ultimately they're doing it as a livelihood, as lots of people will do. And so this allows them to make that switch to regenerative agriculture, and it helps them make some money. Is that the case? Yeah. And do they find that also there's a benefit when it comes to their crops in terms of what they're able to sell? Has there been any offset benefits from doing this as well?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are benefits and it's also a risk. So touching on your first point is, you know, growing our food is such an incredible service that these farmers do. And I don't think most of us understand the complexity and the risk that goes into it, especially because farmers are, you know, we're all subject to the mercy of weather and we have no control over it. So that being said, when farmers want to switch over their practices to regenerative agriculture from the way that they're doing things, and the way that they're doing things, or let's say the conventional way, industrial agriculture, is depleting our soil. So the topsoil is being eroded. We're having lower quality food with less nutrients. We're having higher floods because that soil is not able to retain water. And they're actually not able to grow as much food, and they have to apply and pay for a lot of synthetic fertilizers to grow this food. Now, if they switch to regenerative agriculture practices, the benefits are, over time, you will be able to grow more food per acre, so higher yields per land. You will be able to retain more water, so you're not having to pump as much water from your wells or buy water rights as much, because when it rains, you get to keep it. It's on your land. The topsoil is not eroded or washed off by wind or water, and that topsoil is thick in life, in organic matter. And that organic matter helps to grow higher nutrition-dense foods. So it's a win-win for the farmer who's trying to improve their business and the capacity to grow things on the same amount of land. It's a win for the consumer who's now eating nutrient-dense foods that aren't just like void of those nutrients and minerals that we need to survive, right? Healthier population. And it also helps to sequester that carbon, meaning that anybody who understands a little bit of science knows it's always a mass balance somewhere, right? You can neither create nor destroy energy or matter. It just moves from one form to the next. So that carbon that was in the atmosphere gets stored as little microbes in the soil, and that's what that looks like. And then one thing I just wanted to say, another fact there it's useful is to understand that for farmers, when they make these switches from conventional to regenerative agriculture practices, it can take up to 7 years for them to meet the same yields that they were prior and then improve. So to your point earlier, saying like this is kind of a risk for them, and they need a financial incentive, that's absolutely right. Because they're going to make these switches knowing that maybe from 3 to 7 years, they're going to now improve more of their yield per acre. But it's going to take several years to do that. And no farmer is going to want to like even sign up for one growing season where they're producing less. So they're going to need an additional source of income to make those switches.
Exactly. And a combination between, you know, subsidies and then being able to sell that carbon storage to the market is really absolutely necessary. And it is these markets that drive change. If it's, you know, driving change from industries not being able to afford, you know, coal anymore because it's too expensive because we've taxed it. These are good things that we need. And I think often, you know, money and these type of incentives are really, really powerful. When you think about impact and you think about the next kind of 3, 5+ years at NORI, where is your focus and what's, you know, what are you building towards?
Oh. Well, our tagline since the beginning for NORI has been reversing climate change. And I like to say that, like, that's an aspirational goal, right? I don't think that it's actually possible for us to reverse climate change, because we won't even be able to reverse the effects of climate change that we're experiencing today. But to get back down to safe levels of CO2 in the atmosphere, right now we're over 418 parts per million of CO2 in our atmosphere, and safe levels are around 300. We've emitted 1.5 trillion tons of carbon or more since the Industrial Revolution. So our aim is to like help enable global mobilization of removing 1.5 trillion tons of carbon that has already been emitted in the atmosphere, so we can get back to safe levels. And then, you know, who knows what the future will look like? Maybe AI will run everything, but the idea is that there would be some stability in our climate.
Well, very well said. And as we kind of get to the end of our recording, I just wanted to just, you know, some of the branding inspiration for this podcast is influenced by Dr. Seuss's book, The Lorax, which is this kind of cautionary tale of what's happened when you take too much from the environment. And you just kind of said it, right? We've dumped about 1.5 trillion tons of CO2 into the atmosphere in a very, very short period of time. And so, you know, you've been passionate about this since a teenager, which is not something that we often hear. And so what would your advice be to people that are listening, that are thinking about entering in this climate space, if it's joining a company or starting a business or investing in one? What would you say to them if they want to get involved?
You know, I think it might be surprising. I would say be kind, give grace, and take another step forward. And what do I mean by that? I think we find ourselves right now politically in this like strange culture of blaming and shaming. And I think we're all feeling a lot of overwhelm over different aspects of the economy that we live in. And we're experiencing overwhelm over this existential crisis of climate change. Like, I think most people feel powerless to do anything about it. And that's totally fair and understandable. So if you're going to enter into the space where you're just going to, you know, if you meet someone entering in this space and you're not necessarily in it, just be kind and give grace. And it will never be perfect. But if we can support each other and help each other to see where we're falling short as a way of like, you know, helping us improve because we know where we're falling short or how we can do better, how we can work better together. I think that is a big thing. That's my biggest ask from people in this space. I think I'm a little exhausted by the blaming and the shaming and you didn't do this right. And well, they're doing that. And I'm like, come on guys, we don't have time for this. We don't have time to be operating out of fear, to be assuming the worst out of each other. Let's just assume we're all really just trying to do the best for this planet. And if we're seeing something that we don't agree with, have a nice, open, curious conversation about it. If you don't agree, then you don't agree. But you might oftentimes find in those conversations that they do agree with you. They just didn't notice it because they're busy focusing on something else. And that's totally fine.
Well, wonderfully said, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us on the podcast today. Where can listeners find out more about Nori and learn more about yourself?
Yeah, so nori.com, obviously, and then Instagram, we have an Instagram account and a meme account. So there's Nori Carbon Removal is our Instagram handle, and then there's Carbon Removal Memes on Instagram. It's hilarious. I crack up at some of the things that they put out. So if you're like a climate tech nerd and you just want some humor in your feed, go after Carbon Removal Memes on Instagram. I am Clean Energy Girl on Twitter without an I in girl. So that was taken. Or just find me on LinkedIn. I'm not very big on social media presence, but you can find me LinkedIn or Twitter.
Well, thank you so much, and good luck to you and your team for everything that you built, and we're excited to follow you into the future, and let's get more companies to sign up and keep moving forward on what is a market that I can't see do anything but grow like crazy because we absolutely need it. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Marco.
This podcast is co-produced with The Brand is Female. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. And if you did, please share this. We're a new podcast, and I would love it if you could share it with a family member, friend, colleague, work colleague, share it on Slack, whoever you do, just share and spread the message of these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.